The Spider, the Cholera King, 1 by Norval Page. Chapter 1. The Black Cross. Richard Wentworth's high forehead was marked by a frown as he stood at the aft rail of the SS Bremen, a 45 caliber automatic in each hand. He told himself sharply that he was foolish to be suspicious of a man who had challenged him to this shooting match. His constant need for alertness against bitter, ever-present enemies was making him overly cautious. But the uneasy feeling persisted. A shooting match compelled him to turn his back on a man he did not know, a stranger who was holding a loaded gun in his hand. A clay pigeon arched out from the lower deck where a steward was operating the traps. Wentworth's right-hand gun blasted from the hip. The target smashed, rained fragments down upon the frothing wake of the ship. Of course, Nita Van Sloan was behind him too. She could watch the man, but she was unarmed, and it had seemed foolish to warn her. A second target skittered to the left and his other gun shattered that. He turned and smiled at the man who had challenged, glanced toward Nita. "You see why I dislike to accept your wager," he said to the man, whose name was Frank Hoffman. Hoffman was young, with a high mass of curly, blonde hair. He had a hearty laugh. But somehow, this time, his laughter did not quite ring true. "You're good," Hoffman conceded. "But my chance is coming," Nita Van Sloan called out sharply. "Dick." Wentworth whipped about, snapped a shot at a target which had almost reached the sea. Its fragments made a little circle of splashes. He did not look about again, but stood relaxed, guns hanging at his sides. When a target offered, he automatically lifted the weapon nearest the pigeon. His thoughts were not on a shooting. They did not have to be, even though he was giving a really remarkable demonstration of target work. Men usually fired at this type of target with shotguns, aiming carefully, following the target with the muzzle. Wentworth was snap shooting. He had always maintained that there was nothing remarkable about his accuracy, that any man who gave it the same amount of time who had to depend the use of guns for his life, as Wentworth had, would develop the same ability. He had practiced tirelessly and his guns had stood him in good stead on many a perilous campaign against the underworld, to the suppression of which he had pledged his life. Subconsciously, he counted the shots, 4, 5. He carried 7 in each gun, 1 in the barrel chamber, 6 in the clip. Impatiently, he dismissed his suspicions of Hoffman. There was a black speck on the horizon, where the setting sun gleamed like a sullen fire. The speck was too large, too steady in its flight to be a seabird. But what would a plane be doing out here, so many miles from shore? There were no transatlantic flights underway. 6. That left 1 bullet in the right gun, 3 in the left. He used the left one on the next target. That speck was a plane, approaching very rapidly. 6. That left 1 bullet in the left-hand gun also. Behind him, Nita Van Sloan screamed in abrupt warning. "Dick, look out!" Wentworth did not whirl as most men would have done to see the cause for that scream. He relaxed all the muscles of his body and spilled himself prone. While he was still falling, a gun barked, kept on barking, behind him. He hit the deck, rolled, his own guns coming up. Hoffman was crouched, his young face savage, his lips twisted to bare his teeth. 3 shots had sped from his gun, cutting just above Wentworth. As he fell, a 4th bullet wedged on the steel mesh below the railing. Wentworth steadied his right-hand gun coolly. His left arm was pinned awkwardly beneath him and squeezed the trigger. A cry burst from his lips. Across the line of fire, a woman had flung herself, straight toward Hoffman's gun. It was Nita. Something like a sob drove up through Wentworth's throat. He tried to jerk up the muzzle of his gun, hurled himself to his feet at the same instant, his eyes never leaving the tableau before him. Because of his split-second control of his muscles, he had been able to throw his bullet over Nita's head. Beauty, that gun was now empty. It would take precious moments to have his left gun ready to shoot. Nita Van Sloan had seized Hoffman's gun wrist with her left hand. With her right, the first 2 fingers pronged and stiffened, she was striking at his eyes and throat. If she could hit certain nerve centers there. Hoffman spun and wrenched, trying to rip the gun from Nita's grasp. Her feet were snapped clear of the floor and she fell heavily to her knees, but still she clung to the gun. Hoffman's glance shot beyond her to Wentworth, saw him half off the floor, his left hand automatic rising. The man's eyes flared wide as he looked into Wentworth's implacable gaze. With a hoarse scream, he abandoned struggling for the gun in Nita's hands, sprang for the rail and poised a scant moment on its top. Then he arched out into space, plunging toward the water. Wentworth was back on his feet now. He could smash a bullet into Hoffman's body before the assassin hit the water, but he held his fire. The man could not escape now. And if he could be rescued from the sea, it might be possible to force some explanation from him. Wentworth lifted Nita to her feet, put an arm about her waist, took her to the railing and watched Hoffman's head bobbing as the wake from the propellers battered him. Nita was sobbing with anger. "Damn him," she whispered. "Damn him, Dick, he almost." "He, shh, darling," Wentworth whispered. "Shh." "He did, but you saved my life." He could feel the rigidity of her body under his arm. Cords stood out beneath the soft skin of her throat. I couldn't reach his throat," she said. "And he hurt my knees." Wentworth laughed and squeezed her. An officer was racing aft along the deck, shouting inquiries in guttural English. The ship's whistle belched a deep note and someone shouted, "Man overboard!" Abruptly, Wentworth stiffened, jerked his eyes toward the sky. The plane. It had come up rapidly and was circling, no more than a half mile astern there, dipping toward the water. Damn it. This had all been carefully planned, Ned. Hoffman's leap overboard had been part of the scheme, and that airplane back there was here in mid-Atlantic to pick him up. He half-whirled towards the ship's officer to speed back, but he knew it was useless. The Bremen's 28-knot pace had left Hoffman far behind and the plane was already on the surface. They'd have the assassin aboard and be gone again before the Bremen could complete its turn. The officer was beside them now, still shouting, "You can proceed on your way," Wentworth told him shortly. "A man attempted to assassinate me and leaped overboard. He has already been rescued by a Confederate in that plane. Will you use your glasses, please, and see if you can read its numbers?" The officer cried. "Assassin? You're mad, mad." He turned to Wentworth, met the impact of his gray blue gaze and abruptly subsided, his face growing dark with embarrassment. He clicked his heels, bowed stiffly. "Your pardon, sir," he mumbled thickly. "But you must admit it is startling," Wentworth said impatiently. Right, all right. Use your glasses and get the plane's number." The plane was already wheeling for a takeoff. Hoffman was clambering up from a pontoon to a wing in the cockpit. The officer drained his glasses on the ship, shook his head. Impatiently, Wentworth took the binoculars, but it was clearly useless. Either the seaplane's numbers had been painted out or there was some means of covering them temporarily. Moments later, the craft bounced into the air and circled slowly upward. There was a soft step on the deck beside Wentworth and he glanced about, smiling slightly as he met the anxious gaze of a powerfully built Hindu who wore a white turban bound tightly about his head and whose full, bushy beard could not hide the alarm on his swarthy face. "I heard shouting, master," he said, his nasal voice harsh in his native Punjabi dialect. He was a Sikh, a member of the most warlike tribe of India. Wentworth handed him the two empty automatics. "Fresh clips, Ram Singh," he ordered. "And then one attempted my life and is fleeing in that airplane." The Sikh's bearded lips smiled back from his white teeth. "Wah, Sahib. There is a small plane in the bows, that which brought the mail. Thy servant could fly after him." Wentworth's eyes gleamed, then he shook his head, left shortly. Ram Singh referred to the catapult plane which had flown to the ship with the late mail yesterday evening. It was lashed to the deck, and could be quickly released, but it would not have the speed necessary to overtake that ship ahead. He gave his arm to Nita, led her toward the suite she shared with the gray-haired dowager, Mrs. Robinson, whom Wentworth employed as a companion for her on the rare occasions when they could travel together. "Do thou stand, ever at my back, Ram Singh," he said briefly to the Sikh, speaking in Punjabi also. They advanced rapidly along the decks. Wentworth said little even in the suite as a stewardess dressed the abrasions on Nita's knees. He paced with long, little strides up and down the main salon, went out on the private deck and stared out over at the brazen surface of the water, his thoughts turbulent. Dear Nita. Her bravery was a match for his own. Well, he knew that if she could have stopped those bullets no other way, she would have stopped their tearing death with her own sweet body. Damn it. What was behind this new attack upon him? He had no more than a month ago put down a fierce uprising of the underworld, had nearly lost his life in the fight. Now he was bound abroad for a short rest, a peaceful time with Nita. It seemed his enemies did not will him to rest. Wentworth clasped his lean hands, leaned his forearms on the railing. Was it possible that someone had discovered his secret identity? Did some new master criminal aspire to organize the underworld and seek to pave the way by murdering? The spider? That was the personality Wentworth had created to carry his justice to criminals, a stooped, caped figure who went silently and terribly through the night, bringing his dread judgment to those the law could not reach, leaving on their chilling foreheads the small, crimson seal of his wrath, a glistening spider. Yet, it was not necessarily true that they had learned who he was. In his own identity, Richard Wentworth was an amateur criminologist, a close friend of the Commissioner of Police, a man whom the authorities often consulted in time of stress. He had fought powerfully in that way, too, against the criminals, had created a host of bitter enemies. His finely chiseled lips clamped firmly together. His duty was plain. He must speed back to New York and seek out the reason for this new attack. Damnable that it should spoil this rare outing with Nita. She would not complain, God knew, but... Wentworth's head whipped up sharply. A shadow had fallen across the ship. He stared out into the red fury of the evening sky, saw the plane on which Hoffman was making his escape. It seemed almost motionless against the sun, a black cross in the heavens, the black shadow of that cross smudging the ship's high side. Wentworth frowned. The thing was strangely sinister, an evil portent in this night of trouble. Good God, what was that? Up on a higher deck, a man had uttered a shrill scream of pain and terror. The sound rolled on and on, sobbing into the twilight, strangling, horrible. With a muffled curse, Wentworth darted across Nita's salon. She had jerked to her feet. The stewardess knelt bolt upright on the floor and there was a fearful question in the two women's eyes. "Stay here," Wentworth called, as he sped into the corridor. God knows what has happened now. As he hurried to the companionway, he was aware of Ram Singhart on his heels. He took his reloaded automatics from the seat, then dashed up steep stairs, swung out on the deck. Frightened men and women were hurrying away from the spot where the scream had sounded. Wentworth fought the human tide, came presently to a man who lay writhing upon the deck. He was bent double over his folded arms, his limbs rigid, his breath hoarse in his throat. A steward was kneeling beside him. Another ran for the ship's surgeon. Wentworth stood staring down at the crumpled figure for a long moment. He heard a harsh Punjab oath grate in Ram Singh's throat, felt the Sikh's hand upon his arm. "Sahib," Ram Singh whispered, "in the name of the All High, Sahib, come away." Wentworth frowned. "What's the matter, Ram Singh?" "Don't you remember, Sahib?" the Sikh said quickly, still tugging insistently at Wentworth's arm. "It's summer in Bengal, with men dropping like flies in the streets." A gasp burned Wentworth's throat. He stared at the writing man, then jerked the steward away violently. "Keep away from him, man," he commanded harshly. "Go wash your hands, your whole body with germicidal soap. Throw your clothing overboard, or better still, burn it." The steward stared at Wentworth with bulging eyes. "In heaven's name," he whispered. "What? What do you mean, sir?" Wentworth stood staring with pitying gaze at the man on the deck. The victim was entirely conscious. His eyes looked beseechingly at them, while his body still twitched with pain. Wentworth had seen other men die thus in the streets of Bengal towns, had seen their faces turn wrinkled and old before his eyes, had seen the violent tinge of death creep over their faces and limbs which twitched with perpetual convulsions. God, he should recognize the most dread plague of India, the scourge which killed thousands every year and had swept the wide world in five or six great epidemics to pile the dead in droves upon the sidewalks, men dying too swiftly for the survivors to destroy the death-spreading cadavers.
"Please, sir,"
whispered the steward.
"What do you mean?
Your face. You frighten me." Wentworth laughed shortly.
"I frighten myself," he said.
"If this is the epidemic variety," he shut his lips into a thin gash.
"Do as I told you."
The surgeon arrived hurriedly, dropped down beside the dying man. His ruddy cheeks abruptly paled.
"A stretcher, quickly, steward," he snapped.
The surgeon rose slowly, as the men ran off and he met Wentworth's grim gaze.
"You know,"
he whispered. Wentworth nodded slowly.
"You'll make microscopic tests at once,
of course," he said quietly.
"If this is the Asiatic variety of cholera."
"Yes, yes,"
the surgeon agreed hurriedly.
"But how could it be? How could it?" The man on the deck writhed in a new convulsion, bent double with the violence of his nausea. When at last it was over, the surgeon whipped open his case, took a pill from a vial and forced it through the man's blue-tinged lips.
"Calomel,"
the surgeon explained huskily.
"It has been known to help even in Asiatic cholera.
For God's sake, keep this quiet, sir." The frightened stewards returned and lifted the man to a stretcher, hurried him to the sick bay. The surgeon followed,
his choppy strides making his rotund body bob erratically. "It is the cholera of India," Sahib Ram Singh whispered confidently. "I have seen it far too often." Wentworth turned, thin-lipped, to the railing. The plane still hung there against the sullen sunset. The ominous black cross of its shadow was heavy on the ship. End of chapter 1.